time I hear Napoleon read, I can't but help to think of being somewhere hot and gone on Sunday morning. Accent. I appreciate you reading it too. We're in 7 or 8 lessons on evolution. Next week we'll cover the flood. I want to make an opening thought for you though, but as a preacher, you may know this already. I'm not an expert astronomer, paleontologist, archaeologist. Did you know I'm not a molecular biologist? Yeah. I'm not a geneticist, physicist, chemist, mathematician, physiologist. I'm not any of those. At best, I've been a novice in a couple of those areas. My special area of study and practice has been in the Bible, the Gospel of Jesus Christ, and Christianity in general. And even in that, I'll be more than happy to yield to other, quote, experts, scholars, if it so be that I can press on to the most important point that I'm trying to prove this morning. And with that in mind, I want to ask 3 questions. Do we as Christians have the right to be experts in recognizing unwarranted attacks against our faith by scientists? Don't answer yet, just answer in your mind. Question 2, do we as Christians have an obligation to ask expert questions concerning the, quote, expert data put forth by those reputable scientists? Question number 3, using the same evidence, do we not have the privilege to build a case for our faith in the creator of the universe? I hope you answered yes to all 3 of those questions. Just as we touched on the astronomical and geological obstacles, the hurdles that stand in the way of those who teach evolution is an absolute fact, we have to now reason through just some of the many, many volumes of biological hurdles that evolution must clear. Now, there are 2 different perspectives. A good way to understand the struggle between evolution and creation isn't in the evidence, but in the way the evidence is observed. Okay? It's the same evidence. The true evolutionist observes the world through the eyes of the world, a worldly perspective that does not include God in the picture. Whereas the creationist looks at that same evidence and from a perspective that God is the master designer of all that is around us, not by accident, but through divine planning, 2 sets of glasses, 2 perspectives, same evidence. When we read this book of life, we come to the conclusion it is the book of life. We look at it and we treasure these words. I hope you do if you're a Christian. But when the world looks at it, they say fairy tales. Same book, 2 different perspectives. So then it's up to us to reason the evidence to conclude which perspective would be the most accurate. The facts once disputed and confirmed remain the same for both groups. Simply because they have 2 different worldviews does not mean we cannot weigh that evidence. And so, the worldly perspective, I like to sum it up in Psalm chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. Psalm 10, 3 through 5. He boasts of the cravings of his heart. He blesses the greedy and reviles the Lord. In his pride, the wicked does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. His ways are always prosperous. He is haughty. And in your laws are far from him. He sneers at all his enemies. If a person is holding to a worldly perspective, they are narcissistic in their appetites and their behaviors, as Paul would say, whose God is their appetite and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. The one with a worldly perspective looks at the followers of God with contempt, disdain. How do you think they would view any biological evidence if they already think Christians are stupid, or think God is fake. If they've already ruled out the possibility, then they look at the evidence. How do you think they would interpret that? In a godly way? How could they? But then there's the godly perspective. Hopefully that's the perspective that everyone who's sitting down here today holds to. In Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16, is the creationist perspective. Verse 13, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, and I know full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." David is speaking now from a creationist perspective in this passage. And while under the inspiration of God, David pointed out at least three of the following elements of a creationist perspective. First of all, God plays a part in the formation of people in the womb. Some way, David is saying, God played a part in the reproduction of this individual. Number two, God is able to cause reverence and awe in that formation. David has no way of knowing the details of how we come together in the womb. It was before the technology. Yet he says, what happens in the womb is so incredible, it would cause men to awe and have reverence toward God. And the third thing is, God is able to see our unformed bodies prior to the Genesis in the womb. There seems to be detailed knowledge of our bodies even before we are brought forth in that womb. Now, with that in mind, let's look at a few pieces of factual evidence of molecular biology. DNA. As Brian showed in that video to illustrate what happens in a cell. See, we don't see what really is working behind the scenes with our naked eye. So I ask that we appeal to the science world and see if we can still hang on to our faith. DNA is incredible. The creationist view of DNA, if you were to stand on the side of creation and look at DNA, here's what you'll find. God designed the average adult human to contain about 100 trillion cells, more or less, depending upon the size of the individual. And these cells are classified into at least 210 types, including skin, muscle, bone, hormones, organs, brain, dozens of other tissues and secretions. And the word cell simply means small room. That's why they call it a prison cell. It's a small room. It's not a mansion. It is a cell. So you have 100 million or 100 trillion tiny rooms that make you up. You want to know what's in those rooms? Well, you have something called DNA. It's spelled DNA. Okay? I know that. And this molecule has 46 chromosomes. See, inside each cell is a nucleus. And inside the nucleus, you'll find the chromosomes, which are contained in the DNA. And that DNA molecule, well, it resembles a double helix, like a staircase, a circular staircase. And the reason why it's condensed down into the double helix is because you have a lot of information you have to pack into this molecule. If you were to stretch out that molecule in that little tiny cell, you can't even see the molecule. They determine it with an electron microscope. They have determined that that molecule is 6 feet long. Pretty compact, isn't it? A lot of information. Now, if you converted all that information, see, in each rung of the ladder, two helixes, and you have all the information in between. It's held together by that. you would have more than 10 billion rungs on that ladder. One cell, one nucleus, one DNA molecule. If you were to convert all the information, at least the information that we know from those 10 billion rungs, it would fill about at least 25 volumes of an unabridged dictionary. I was going to have a whole stack of books up here this morning, but I figured I could describe to you how much that would be. Technically speaking, it would be every songbook we had here in the building, okay, of information because of the format of the songbook. So it's an incredible amount of information. Now, you have 46 chromosomes, and as David stated in Psalm 139, verse 13, you formed me in my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. We start out as one of these human cells. 23 chromosomes from the mom, 23 chromosomes from the dad. We're no bigger than a dot on a page. That's how you started out. That's the cell. And the nucleus is way smaller inside it. Now, as we start out as a dot on a page, that DNA molecule, you know what a hard drive is on a computer? This is something more advanced than a hard drive that you can't even see with the naked eye. There's that much information on it. All the information about the possibilities of your eye color, hair color, your sex, your skin color, your body build, potential height, weight, blood type, genetic strengths and weaknesses, all these things are recorded in you, in that DNA molecule. That little tiny hard drive in that little tiny room that you have 100 trillion of. Now, with that in mind, that single cell will divide and multiply for the entire lifespan of the human. Initially, during the cell duplication, the DNA ladder unhooks. This all unhooks. 23 go, the other 23 join together, and they form a new human. And inside that womb, this process, as it duplicates, it breaks off and then reforms another cell, and it can occur, literally occur, 1,000 times a minute. This is a second, actually, 1,000 times a second. That's how quick it is. In fact, if it wasn't that fast, you would actually, just to get out of the first stage of the embryonic stage, would take 10,000 years. Ladies, aren't you glad God fearfully and wonderfully made your womb? Yes, I'm in the third millennium of my pregnancy. It would certainly make the baby showers go pretty lousy, wouldn't it, Micah? Now, with that in mind, in this tiny set of blueprints, all the information about the tissue and the organs and the bones and hormones, hands, feet, hair, everything else that you need to make a baby is in there. We didn't put it in there. God put it in there. If you believe there's a God, you believe that he invented DNA. Now, as mentioned in Psalm 139, verse 16, he saw my unformed body. As a believer holding a Christian creation perspective, I'm persuaded that he invented DNA, and as a master planner, he understands this very detailed, complex information that we can only begin to scratch the surface in the scientific world. In fact, Bill Gates compared a DNA molecule to a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software that's ever been made. Yet, who wrote it? If you came across a copy of Windows 7, okay, at Best Buy, and they tried to propose to you that it formed by random chance, but we're going to charge you $109.99 for it, would you really believe, would you trust a disk that would just form and show up on Best Buy's shelf? I wouldn't. But we have the creationist view. We look at this information, and we're excited about that. Romans 11:36, for from him and to him and through him are all things. To him be glory forever. Amen. I tell you, we're just so excited about them finding DNA because it shows us how awesome God really is. How could he know me inside the womb. How could he know me before I was formed? Because, oh, look at the DNA. Oh, there's Doug. He knows that information. And now that we know about DNA, we can now trust that even more. You know, you have 3 billion cells that die in your body. You know, every minute, right? You know, just in the last 60 seconds, 3 billion of your tiny rooms died. But you didn't know that because your body and the DNA told it to replicate more cells. If you had brain cells that died, let's try to replicate. If you have other tissue that died, let's replicate. Your skin cells died, let's replicate. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. And my soul knows it very well, and I hope your soul knows it as well. But the evolutionist view of DNA, here's two of their best possible answers to explain DNA. Whereas we say it indicates a master designer. Number one, they say it formed through a lightning strike on some gravelly, muddy water. There was actually a study, the Miller-Urey experiment, that attempted to do this very thing in a lab. They threw the elementary, common elements they believe was in the beginning, and they just shocked it like lightning for a week. They just shocked the dickens out of it, okay? And at the end, all they had was some simple amino acid, or actually just simple proteins. That's all they had was the simple proteins. No DNA, no RNA, nothing. And they concluded that it probably didn't happen that way based on that experiment. But yet they're still hanging on to, well, I think that lightning struck a mud puddle and formed DNA. I don't know about you, but things that in my world that get struck by lightning don't turn out well. Have you noticed that? You know, you have surge protectors on your computer, so when lightning strikes, your hard drive doesn't go like that. Now, can you imagine if you took your computer down to Alliance Computer and they told you, well, what you need to do is your hard drive's ruined, but go get it struck by lightning and everything will turn out just fine. It'll be better than ever. You would never go back to Alliance again. Here's another option that's being floated among the evolutionists. They look at it and they say, well, panspermia. And what panspermia is, because they know it's so complicated, and they say, wow, little tiny, massive, mega hard drives in little tiny rooms numbering hundreds of trillions in the body. That's impressive. It couldn't have formed by accident. So therefore, a meteor came from outer space and crashed into the earth, and it brought a seed. Or aliens planted the DNA seed here on earth. And we're foolish to believe that God put this together. Where did the alien come from? Two different perspectives. Here's another one. The creationist view of blood coagulation. Science of the scab. Leviticus 17:11 says, the life is in the blood. And that is very, very true. Blood is anything but a lifeless thing. In your blood clotting, you know, raise your hand if you've ever had a scab. Raise your hand. I want to make sure everybody knows that. Okay? All right. Mike Green never had a scab. We'll introduce you to the scab after service. The bruise and the scab. Bruise being scab under the skin. Okay? But here's what the experts say, not Doug, the experts. See, I got a doctor sitting up here. Joe's going to take me to the woodshed if it's not true, right, Joe? Okay? In blood clotting, here's how it works. This is what the experts say. Now, don't try to memorize this. I'm going to almost forget it as soon as I tell you. I'm reading what the experts say. Here's what they say. We all have a free-floating protein in our blood called fibrinogen. It just sits there, floating around your blood. You don't even know it's there. So it's a rod-shaped it's a rod-shaped protein. Looks like a barbell with like a nice cushy thing in the middle. And so what happens is, you know, it just remains inactive in the blood. At the point when you're cut, though, there's another protein called thrombin. And it starts cutting off those two sections on one side or the other, and then it makes a giant fishnet, which catches droplets of blood for you. Now, but what told the thrombin to start slicing the fibrinogen? Well, it's called the Stewart factor protein. It's activated by the accelerant. Well, what told those to do that? It's modified by 10 amino acid residues called glutamine. Doug, what do those have to do with everything? Though there are several other processes that have to occur, it's so complicated, they call it the coagulation cascade, because it all has to come together at one time. It's incredible. I mean, just reading about it hurts your head. It's beyond the scope of this sermon and this mind, but rest assured, nobody here will probably bleed to death nor die of a blood clot before the end of the sermon, because God built it into DNA. That's a creationist view of what's going on. To the simple believer, we look at a scab on our skin and proclaim, "Wow! I'm fearfully and wonderfully made." Got a little one right there. God is awesome. Look at that. But to the evolutionist, they look at the coagulation cascade and are left with the following questions. How did such a complex clotting structure in our bodies come into existence without the host dying prior to the formation? Think about that. If you didn't have that in place, you would die. I mean, you'd just be dead. We wouldn't even make it to the end of this sentence, would we, Joe? We'd be gone like that. However, there's another question. How did the host, which houses the intact clotting coagulation cascade, how did that survive prior to evolution? If you think about that, they had to both come into place at the same time. As Professor Behe of Lehigh University wrote in Darwin's Black Box, he's a molecular biologist, he recorded down, the fact is no one on earth has the vaguest idea how the coagulation cascade came to be. Regardless of what letters are in front of their name, they don't even have a reasonable explanation to say how this came to be. Next time you receive a paper cut and a scab forms, you're totally justified in praising God that it worked out. The creationist view of the human eye. There's the third thing I want to look at. The human eye. Jesus said in Luke 11:34, "The eye is the lamp of the body. When your eye is clear, your whole body is full of light. But when it is bad, your body is also full of darkness." We must remember that before ophthalmology, science of the eye, people already knew of the complexity of the eye. I mean, it's truly, to the creationist, we look at an eyeball and we say, "Wow, that is really, really neat. It's amazing. How did that come into being?" It's not an uncommon thing to find people going blind in the first century. You know, things that would probably make us blind today, we can get easily treated at the doctor, and we're able to show up on Sunday, now everybody see each other. But in the first century, very, very complicated. Matthew 20, verse 30, two blind men were sitting by the side of the road. That wasn't an uncommon thing. They cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." They want to see. It's believed that Paul also suffered from a terrible eye condition, which prompted him to say, in Galatians 4:15, "You would have plucked your eyes out and given them to me." You know, how fearfully and wonderfully are we made? Scientists have discovered more about the eye since Jesus walked on the earth. I want to just share with you a little of that information. There are more than 40 separate components of the eye that must work together in order for us to clearly see. You can see me. You have at least 40 components that are making that possible right now. Many of these are not fully evolved at the same time. If just even one is not, of those 40 components are not finished evolving, the other 39 can't make up the difference. you just will not be able to see and will eventually go blind because of it. In other words, if one component is bad, you now qualify for the bad eye program that Jesus was talking about. Take, for example, a modern ophthalmology term. It's hard to say. Three tiny eye movements referred to as tremors, drifts, and saccades. These three micro movements in the six muscles, they work on outside your eyes. See, right now, as you're looking at me, everything looks steady, doesn't it? You ever hold a camera and you zoom in, and it's like moving all around? They have digital stabilization in the cameras, but that only works a little bit. You have those in your eyes. And one of the components that you have, for example, the tremor, you have a tiniest part in your eye. Under a microscope, it's shown to wobble in a circular fashion of 1/70th of a thickness of a piece of paper. You can take a piece of paper, the thin side, and cut it into 70 pieces. That's how small that movement is. But without that movement, things really are not going to look right. Another one, even more amazing, is a characteristic is that your eye produces about 30 to 70 times a wobble every second. In those little tiny microscopic muscles you didn't even know about before molecular biology. If sound were involved, it would be actually vibrating at such a pitch, it would be a low-pitched hum. That's moving all the time, stabilized. When you look, it focuses. Look, it focuses. That is in your eye. And when we look at the eye, in that context, we are truly, fearfully, and wonderfully made. In fact, that one tremor, your eye will complete 1 million of these tiny motions in your eye, and you didn't even know it, in 5.5 hours. You did something 1 million times, and you never even knew. But if you didn't have it, you wouldn't even be able to see me. There are dozens of parts of the eyes that would have to come into being all at once to risk being a worthless eye. The fact that you are looking at the words behind me on the PowerPoint indicates to me that you now understand more clearly that you are fearfully and wonderfully made. But the evolutionists, they look at the eye, and they see it differently. Same evidence. They would look at the exact same evidence I just gave you, and they would try to dismiss it, that it formed by accident. When really the father of evolution himself, Charles Darwin, recognized this complexity even before we knew what we know today. He said, quote, "To suppose that the eye, with all of its imitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree." He said that in Origins of the Species. The evolutionist really doesn't have a plausible explanation on how the eye came to be. You had to have all 40 components form at the same time, or it's a worthless piece of flesh. You know, I feel pretty comfortable looking at your eye and seeing my Creator and glorifying Him. When looking at these facts, as the scientists reveal them, it appears to confirm that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. God knows who we are. He wrote DNA. He wrote the program. God is the Bill Gates of heaven. He wrote the program. He knows who you are before you are. Would you want it any other way, though? Conclusion, only a small slice of biological evidence has been discussed in this lesson. But I think you might have the point. You have nothing to be ashamed of for looking at the exact same evidence and proclaiming God is your Creator, Jesus can be your Savior, and that you have a plan in life because you have a master planner who's heading the course for you. If you would like to respond to the invitation this morning, We offer it to you as we stand and sing.
This is my Father's word, and to my listening ears, all nature sings and round me rings the music of the spheres. This is my Father's word.